Are you looking for inspiring conversations about faith, film, and life? You're in the right place. Here's the host who knows the right questions to ask, Father Edward Looney.
Hey, everybody, it's Father Edward Looney here, and I'm very excited to be having a conversation today about a new movie that is in theaters today, March 8th. It's called Cabrini. I'm sure if you are a Catholic and have listed Catholicism somewhere on your Facebook page, you have seen the ads for Cabrini. It's a new film that Angel Studios has put out, and it is in theaters throughout the country. And whenever a movie like this releases, it's very important to go opening weekend, send a message, make it, you know, a big hit at the box office. Hopefully it ends up in the top position. I don't know what it's competing against, but, you know, top five is always great if you're a Christian-based film. But so many people have talked about this Cabrini movie, and a lot of people are on board with it. I love Mother Cabrini. I encountered Mother Cabrini by accident at a shrine in Chicago and just really fell in love with the shrine and the images and her story. And it's a shrine that I've returned to several times now in my own devotional life. If I'm in Chicago, I'm like, I'm going to stop at Cabrini Shrine and I'm going to pray there for a little bit. So this movie is going to introduce so many people to Mother Cabrini. But as people go to the theaters and then they leave the theaters, they go home, maybe they're overwhelmed with what they've seen. Well, they want to unpack it. They want to know more about who this Mother Cabrini is, because the movie only tells you just a little bit of her life. There's so much more. And today I'm very excited to be speaking with Kristen Terrio the show to speak more about Mother Cabrini. She's written actually a devotional companion that's published by Sophia Institute Press. And very happy to hear her insights into this saint. So thanks so much, Kristen, for joining me today.
Hi, Father. Thanks for having me.
And of course, I should say, too, like I've had you on my show before. You're the editor of Catholic Exchange. That's one of your responsibilities. But you had a different last name. So you're recently married.
Yes.
So before on an episode, you're Kristen Van Uden. You've been a spokesperson for a lot of dead authors. That's really kind of one of your roles at Sophia, I know. And so here you are today to talk about Mother Cabrini. Just maybe first things first, what was your thoughts about the film? You know, I think every film is entitled to some criticism, whatever. Like, you know, for me, I thought maybe the women empowerment was overplayed. Just like, you know, if seven is too much, but like six would have been okay. So it was just like on the borderline there. But I liked it. I think it's great. Hollywood telling our Catholic story, stories of our saints, people thinking about saints, and maybe that leads them to intercession. So I'm curious what your thoughts about Cabrini from Angel Studios was.
Yeah, so my first impression of the film was fantastic, and I got to see it early. Luckily, I got to pre-screen it in order to write this book and put this together. So I can't wait to see it again on the big screen, because I think that'll be even more impactful. But one thing that's very hard to do with Catholic movies, that sometimes you go to a Catholic or Christian movie almost skeptical and cringing and worrying, oh, this is going to look low budget, or it's going to be sort of cringeworthy somehow. And this is not that at all, which was very impressive. Just the what they were able to do, especially as a period drama, because of course I studied history and I'm very much into period dramas, and they got the costuming on point, the setting was on point, and everything looked extremely well planned out and realistic and accurate. So that I think will help a long way in the secular film industry, obviously, and in reaching a market that is used to high quality films. And in my opinion, like, other than The Passion, it's one of the better Christian films that I have seen in a while. So I really liked the way that her motherhood is portrayed too, because her role as a spiritual mother, I can understand some of the criticisms coming about the more feminist tone and how that is in the marketing, etc. But I think if you're familiar with Mother Cabrini, and if you understand where she was really coming from a spiritual point, her power is all coming from God, and she doesn't take any of the glory for herself, and she gives it back to God, and she her role as a spiritual mother, which is her vocation, which is God-given, is really from where she derives all of this power that she was able to enact here in the temporal realm. So yes, overall, very positive.
Yeah, and you know what, like in the marketing, and that's kind of what people are seeing as, and it's being released coincidentally on International Women's Day, you know, like that's intentional.
Yeah.
Happens to be a Friday, which is a movie release day, makes it convenient to select and to choose that date. But, you know, I think it's probably one of those ways that you're able to bring someone, maybe someone's like, oh, I want to hear this story about a Catholic woman who was influential and who challenged the powers or whatever. But then you bring them in and then they see, oh, this is who Mother Cabrini is. And this is what true feminism, let's say, looks like. And so it could be one of those ways just to bring them to get to know Mother Cabrini and to be inspired. Whereas maybe if you didn't market it in that way, they wouldn't be drawn in and they wouldn't go see it. So there could be an advantage to that, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. And of course, we kind of say, oh, we don't need that. We know who she is already. But that's not the case for many people and for many potential viewers and converts. So hopefully that's in the vein of the missionary spirit that she herself had. One other aspect of the movie that I find you don't really get, and it's of course impossible to do everything in a 2-hour movie, but something that I would really encourage people to delve into her own writings to get a better sense of is her love of souls, because a lot of what she did obviously was more humanitarian work and relieving the physical suffering of those that she served and helping to bring them out of poverty and provide education and so on. But ultimately, what her main goal was to provide for their eternal happiness. And she was constantly seeking conversions. And part of the point of having schools was not just to provide an education in the short term, but to provide a strong Catholic formation that would take them throughout their whole lives. And so this is something that is maybe more difficult to come through on the screen, but when you read her letters, she is just constantly thinking of how can I bring the gospel to this person, or how can I be Jesus to so on. And it's not only these marginalized communities. One interesting aspect was that she often traveled on steamships, and she would be invited by the first class passengers, even the captains, which included many kind of high profile Protestants, to dine with them, to, you know, spend time with them up on deck. And she was trying to convert even them, of course. So she would plant the seeds. And there's a story she tells of a Protestant lady who was just very intrigued by her order and spent a lot of time with them and promised that when she went to Rome, which is where they were headed, she would look up the order and do some more inquiry into the faith. So she just had this constant attitude and disposition of attempting to convert, even if you could only plant the seeds in the moment.
Yeah, I think this is great that you've written a little companion. So it's called the Mother Cabrini Companion. So it's kind of like jumping on the Cabrini bandwagon, the train, you know, as it's leaving the station, as it's arriving in theaters and such, because people are going to be curious and they're going to want to know more about her. And I'm sure that's what your companion is all about, is kind of introducing people to the real Mother Cabrini. So if someone picks up your book, what are they going to find and how are they going to get to know her more?
So it's both a companion for the year and a companion to the movie. So the way that it's set up is as a yearly devotional by week. So there are a set number of meditations for each week of the year. And these I have organized thematically. So for example, her thoughts on humility, her thoughts on other virtues, many entries of hers in her letters were about the beauty of God's creation, which she witnessed on her voyages, and how she uses that as a jumping point to meditate on the state of the soul. So, for example, when they're going through a storm, she points out to her sisters that this is what a soul in the state of sin is like inside, just filled with turmoil and unhappy. And then when the sea is tranquil and they're having a beautiful day, she says this is what the soul is like in the state of grace, and this is what eternal happiness in heaven will look like. And so just very much kind of capital R romanticism of using God's creation to speak to the actual spiritual realities of what's going on behind the scenes. And so it's designed, I'm envisioning people will use this either when they go to adoration for the week or read it on Sunday and just kind of meditate and turn these over in your mind throughout the week or read one every day. And there's also journaling pages at the end of each chapter or each section so that you can just write your own thoughts on this or take what you want from each chapter. So it's meant to be an interactive companion, really a companion in that sense that you are meant to get something from it. It's not just an information dump, but it's something that you don't have to read all in one sitting, but you can take with you throughout the year, throughout the month, and really get to know her over the long term.
Yeah, and I like that, to get to know her over the long term. So people are going to, I bet there's lots of people that don't know who Mother Cabrini is, and they're like, oh, this is a saint. They don't go to daily mass, so they don't know that her feast day is sometime in November. They don't know her story. If they don't live in Colorado, New York, or Chicago, where she principally was in the States, they might not know her story. So here you are presenting it and saying, well, now that you got to know her on the big screen, why don't you spend some time with her writings? And I think it's interesting what you said, that you've kind of put it together by different themes, humility, creation, et cetera. So that means you read her letters. So she wrote these letters, they're compiled. And so you kind of collected different excerpts and whatnot. Can you just walk us through that process? So like, what's that look like? You're reading the letters and then you're like, oh, that's a great theme. So then you jot down creation, page 13, or like, how do you put together a book collecting the writings of someone else?
Mm-hmm. So I basically went through them chronologically, and everyone that I liked, I would just pull and put in a giant document and worry about organizing it later. And then, of course, certain themes start to emerge, but, you know, they'll be a few years apart. So she'll write about the virtue of obedience in the first letter home, and then later in the 92nd letter. And so putting those together thematically, whereas if you're reading through her letters chronologically, these themes start to emerge, but it's harder to keep track of them because, of course, there's also all the day-to-day things that she's writing about, like we had this for dinner and I met this person on board and things like that. And so it's harder to see the core of her point around certain topics when you're reading the whole things. So I basically just went through like that. And of course, she writes a lot about the Sacred Heart because they are missionary sisters of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. So a lot of what she talks about can be boiled back down to two themes, the missionary vocation and her devotion to the Sacred Heart. And interestingly, she really, as I have an article coming soon in the National Catholic Register about this, where she viewed love as indivisible, basically. So her love of God and her devotion to the Sacred Heart, she viewed her missionary work as an extension of that. And she has a section where she talks about how missionaries are continuing the work of Jesus when he was walking the earth. And this is their role, to thirst for souls the way that he said, "I thirst," from the cross. So I thought that was really beautiful imagery that ties together a lot of these themes. The letters themselves were all written to her sisters. So they're written home to her shrines from on board each of these steamships from all of her various travels, founding missions throughout the world. She, of course, has a lot of extant letters, many of which, or some of which, are more logistical regarding the establishment of these missions. So her letters to cardinals, for example, and to the Pope. Mm-hmm. But I chose to focus on the ones she wrote to her sister, in part because they're so personal, her sisters, and they're so introspective. And she's writing in the role of spiritual mother, even when she is apart from them. So she's seeking to give them spiritual guidance and encouragement, and just really a lot of insight that I think is very universal. So with some of them, it's obvious that she's writing to people who have religious vocations. So when she talks about obedience, for example, it's pretty obvious that's within the context of their order. But a lot of these other meditations, I think, can be applied to anyone, regardless of their state in life. And that's why I think these will speak to everyone, regardless of where you're coming to this from, because she had that knack, again, because she did have such diverse travels where she was able to speak to the hearts of people who were, you know, workers in the mines in Colorado, to the orphans of New York, to the children of Nicaragua, to people in continental Europe and the high echelons of British society on board these steamships. So she had this finesse that allowed her to connect with anyone, regardless of their socioeconomic background. And that's why I think this makes such a great book, because that continues on to a wide readership.
So obviously, I think, you know, maybe 12 months ago, you probably didn't think, oh, I'm going to sit down and write a companion guide,
yes.
a devotional to Mother Cabrini. So this is probably suddenly comes about. Did you ever envision in your life that you'd be drawn to Mother Cabrini and that you would have some sort of devotion arise in your own life because of your work?
That's a good question. And I didn't really. This is something that is a bit outside my wheelhouse. So my first book that I wrote, called When the Sickle Swings, is about Catholics who survived communism. And that is really where the bulk of my research for my entire life has been, is in persecution of the 20th century. And so this is something that's completely different, although it is in the same century. So that, I guess, makes it not as obscure and remote as if I were writing about Thomas Aquinas or something. But I actually, up until this project, embarrassingly would get Mother Cabrini confused with other saints. So Mother Seton, for example, or Mother Drexel, because of the similarities in their vocations.
Sure.
So she's somebody who I didn't really have a particular connection to before this, but after reading, of course, do. And I can't wait to go to the Cabrini Shrine in New York City, for example, the one that's right near the Met Cloisters. And of course, everyone's always like, oh, the cloisters, they're so far out of the city. But just to connect with where she actually walked. But yes, this is one of those situations where it's kind of providential, where you don't choose the saint, but the saint chooses you.
Yeah, so Sophia Institute Press has some other works as well about Cabrini that's available now. Again, timely with the release and kind of this interest in Mother Cabrini because of the movie. So what are some of the other projects that, beside your work, Sophia Institute has available now?
So in addition to the devotional, we republished a full-length biography of Mother that was written in the 1940s. So around the time of her canonization, it was very timely when it was published by Theodore Maynard. So that we rebranded as The World is Too Small, The Life and Times of Mother Cabrini, of course, with the movie imagery on the cover to draw that connection. And then there's also a children's book, which is adorable, which shows, it's really beautiful how the artist was able to capture kind of how they look in the film and make that obvious that there's a connection there, while also adding his own artistic spin to it. So between the three of those, something for everybody.
Yeah, so to kind of pick your flavor, if you want history and facts about her life, if you want to incorporate her writings into your own spirituality so that kind of her thoughts become your thoughts and you develop a love for God and the Sacred Heart like she did, or to instill that devotion into a child and to introduce them to the stories of the saints. So those are all great offerings that Sophia Institute Press is giving us around this film release of Cabrini. Maybe just to share this, I was at a convent of sisters just this week, actually, the Sisters of St. Casimir. They're down in Chicago. They're a Lithuanian order. And so their mother foundress, Venerable Maria Kapis, she has a cause for sainthood. She's venerable. And I was looking in their little museum, and they have kind of her room. Now, Mother Cabrini was in Chicago. She dies in Chicago, I think. And so this sister, this mother, Kapis, her desk has a statue of Mother Cabrini on it. And I wondered, well, did she have the statue of Mother Cabrini before, or is the statue of Mother Cabrini there now? Or like, but then I started thinking about it. I'm like, well, isn't that interesting? Because I think Venerable Maria Kapis dies maybe in 1940, if memory serves me. And so she would have been a near contemporary of Mother Cabrini. And then you're like, oh, they're both women religious foundresses. Like, did they know each other? So like that got me thinking the other day just about Mother Cabrini, her connection to other people and such. And so we're all going to discover those little connections to Mother Cabrini, I think, in the next few weeks as people begin talking more and more about the film. So
Right. And that's really interesting you bring that up, because I, in discussing this project with my grandparents, I found out that each of them said that their mother had a strong devotion to Mother Cabrini, which I never knew before, that this was sort of a family tradition. But it does make sense, because they would have been alive and closely following her canonization. And then either they or their parents would have been contemporaries of hers as she worked, and they're from New York. So this really, she had much more of an impact than we remember, several generations removed.
Do you think the film Cabrini, telling the story of a Catholic saint, do you think maybe a Lutheran, a Presbyterian, a Methodist who goes and sees the movie? Because I'm imagining that's just not going to be Catholics that go see this movie. Angel Studios has a great sphere of influence in who follows them and such. And so I'm imagining that Protestants will go see this film. Do you think that it might move them to reconsider intercession? Saintly
That's a great
intercession.
question. Yeah, probably in the best case scenario, yes. And will at least open their minds to the idea of sanctity and sainthood and those who are set apart for their holiness, because she truly was exceptional in this way. And it's especially from reading her letters too, you get this sense of just this angelic calm that she had that commanded respect from all echelons of society. And the movie also really depicts the adversities that she faced. So even from the human level, there's this very appealing underdog sort of story arc that I think is universally appealing. But yes, I think if we can envision intercession as if she were still alive, and you're asking her to do this for you, to execute some task, and just to see how tenaciously she fought during her lifetime to move up the hierarchy of bureaucracy and to get things done, of course, with respect. And she had to approach the Pope, for example, but maintained this really filial respect and admiration and obedience for him. But this, if you can envision that, is what she's doing in heaven, is she is interceding with exactly as much tenacity as she did in the streets of New York and in the Vatican, then I think that will be a really powerful visual to kind of represent that topic.
It's going to be amazing to see what happens as a result of this film, kind of a Christian-based film company telling the story of a Catholic saint for Catholics, for other believers. I think there's going to be something amazing that comes from it, and we're just going to have to wait and see. And as people see it and want to do more with Mother Cabrini, your companion guide, Kristen Terrio, is a great asset and will be a great aid for many to keep moving along in the spirit of Mother Cabrini after being moved by the film. So if people want to get a copy of it or anything that Sophia is doing about Mother Cabrini, how can they do so?
So it's available for pre-order right now at sophiainstitute.com and also through the Angel Studios website. And I believe you can buy some or all of the books as a bundle too, if you just can't decide which one.
Great. Well, wonderful. I'll try to be sure to link those in the show notes. And if you're looking for something to do, looking for a date night, looking for something to do with your family or just for yourself, make it Cabrini. Go see it this weekend and in the days to come. It's in theaters now and ready for you to go see it and to be touched by her inspiring story. Thanks so much, Kristen, for joining me today.
Thank you so much. God bless.
If you liked today's episode, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you're listening. And don't forget to stay up to date with what Father Edward is doing by following him on Facebook, X, or Instagram at the handle @FREdwardLooney. Thanks for listening, and please join Father Edward again next time for another inspiring conversation.